Welcome to the Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine. Meet 'em, greet 'em, treat 'em, and street 'em. Today's date is October 8, 2014, and I am your skeptical host, Ken Milne. The title of today's podcast is Ketamine, a Bad Reputation. And our guest skeptic today is Megan Groth. Megan is an emergency medicine pharmacist specialist at Fletcher Allen Healthcare in Burlington, Vermont, and an adjunct professor of pharmacy at the Albany College of Pharmacy and Health Science. Welcome back to the SGEM, Megan.
Thanks for having me on again, Ken.
Well, why wouldn't I have you on? You keep sending me all these great papers to review.
And this is only my second appearance.
Megan, last time you were on here, you were talking about lidocaine viscous for aura ulcers in children.
Yeah, that was a good discussion.
We got a lot of feedback, actually, people sending in their stories and personal experiences with it. But that's why we need trials, and that's why we need blinded and randomized control trials, because it's not about personal experiences. It's about the data.
Yeah, absolutely. And we need your skeptical eye on those papers.
Ooh, I've got both eyes open, ready to go. So what do you want to talk about today?
Ken, today I thought we could talk about the bad reputation that ketamine has gotten for increasing intracranial pressure.
Well, you know that we like to start these with cases, so give me a case that we can base this on.
All right, Ken. The case I thought we could discuss is a 25-year-old male who presents to your emergency department as a trauma alert after an alleged assault.
Whoa, wait a minute. That sounds a little too familiar. It sounds like that classic Saturday night presentation my good friend Chris Bond from Sock Mob is always talking about. He always says that the history he gets is that the guy was standing on the corner, minding his own business, with this other guy just jumped me for no reason.
Yes, we do hear that story often. Not so much in Burlington, but some of my previous institutions, we did hear that quite a bit.
Well, I interrupted you, so carry on with your case.
All right. So the EMS service reports that the patient has been minimally responsive during transport, and witnesses at the scene claimed the patient experienced blunt force trauma to the head after being beaten by another man. During the primary survey, you observe that the patient is not protecting his airway with a Glasgow coma scale of 6. You prepare for a rapid sequence intubation prior to the patient getting a CT scan. His vital signs are as follows: a heart rate of 98 beats per minute, a blood pressure of 110 over 75, respiratory rate of 12, and an oxygen saturation of 87% on a non-rebreather mask. You ask your ED pharmacist to prepare ketamine 2 milligrams per kilogram IV and succinylcholine 1.5 milligrams per kilogram for intubation. Additionally, you plan to use intermittent fentanyl boluses as needed after intubation to keep the patient comfortable and facilitate further evaluation, in this case, a CT scan of his head.
Well, I think you've painted a really good picture of the case we have before us. The question, Megan, though, is, does ketamine raise intracranial pressure and adversely affect cerebral perfusion pressures, neurologic outcomes, or mortality compared with other intravenous induction agents commonly used to intubate adult patients in the ED? Megan, you're the pharmacist, so tell me more about ketamine from a pharmacological perspective.
So ketamine is an NMDA receptor antagonist. It exerts sedative, amnestic, and analgesic effects as a dissociative anesthetic. It can be used as an induction agent for RSI in the ED and has relatively stable hemodynamic effects, especially when we compare it to other agents like midazolam, propofol, or the ultra-short-acting barbiturates. Despite this, the use of ketamine for RSI among ED physicians is low.
Yeah, we in the emergency department have been reluctant to use ketamine. We've been warned, whoa, don't use that, especially in certain situations. And one of the main concerns was always it could raise intracranial pressure. So how did ketamine get this bad reputation?
Well, this bad reputation comes from several small case control series that were performed a number of years ago that suggested that ketamine increases ICP through sympathetic stimulation. These case control series evaluated patients with intracranial pathology that included space-occupying lesions or obstructive hydrocephalus, and were not necessarily representative of the majority of ED patients.
And when you say a few years ago, we're talking decades, 30, 40 years ago, correct?
Yeah, it was a number of decades ago.
It's sort of like quantifying someone's alcohol intake. Just a few. Could you elaborate? Could you tell me, what do you mean by a few? All right, so up until recently, etomidate may have been regarded by emergency physicians to be the induction agent of choice for rapid sequence intubation. However, it too now has developed a bad reputation. There are concerns about adrenal suppression and acute lung injury. This might be a topic of a future SGEM episode. However, let's get back to the ketamine story. So what article did you find to help answer that question of whether or not ketamine increases intracranial pressure and causes patient-oriented badness in the emergency department setting with rapid sequence intubation?
So the article is called "The Effect of Ketamine on Intracranial and Cerebral Perfusion Pressure and Health Outcomes, a Systematic Review." It was published earlier this year in Annals of Emergency Medicine.
And you know how we like to do this structured critical review? We start with the PICO statement. So what was the population, Megan?
So the population in this systematic review included 10 studies with 953 patients at least 16 years of age, either intubated prior to or at the point of data collection. Studies were excluded if they evaluated the effects of ketamine on non-intubated patients, were written in languages other than English, or if they lacked a comparison group.
And so, based on the title, the intervention, of course, must have been ketamine, and this was either by bolus or infusion. But what did they compare it to, Megan?
Well, the authors here compared it to any other sedative drug that may have been used for RSI in the ED. The comparisons included sufentanil, remifentanil, etomidate, and fentanyl. In case control studies, the co-interventions included propofol, benzodiazepines, and thiopental.
And what was the outcome they were looking for in this systematic review?
The primary outcomes they were looking for were measures of either intracranial pressure or cerebral perfusion pressure. Secondary outcomes included neurologic outcomes, ICU length of stay, and mortality.
So the authors concluded, quote, "The available data suggests that ketamine does not adversely affect intracranial or cerebral perfusion pressures, neurologic outcomes, or mortality compared with other intravenous induction agents commonly used to intubate adult patients in the ED," end of quote. So we have 7 quality checklists for systematic reviews. Megan, question 1 is the clinical question. Was it sensible and answerable?
Yes, it was.
Number 2, the search for the studies was detailed and exhaustive?
Yes.
3, the primary studies were of high methodological quality.
And I'm going to have to disagree with this one, and we'll talk about this later when we talk about the HADAD score.
Okay, question 4, the results of the studies were reproducible?
Yes, they were.
And were the outcomes clinically relevant?
Certainly, yes, they were.
Question 6, can you comment on the statistical heterogeneity for the primary outcomes? Were they low?
Yeah, I was going to have to disagree with this one. This is why they couldn't perform a meta-analysis and had to keep it as a systematic review.
And the final question, number 7, the treatment effect was large enough and precise enough to be clinically significant.
Yeah, I'll have to disagree with this one because they actually didn't find a difference in the outcomes of interest between ketamine and the comparator groups.
But that might be clinically significant based on the data presented, but we'll go through that through the results in the comment sections. From the key results standpoint, the data was available on 168 of the included 953 patients regarding intracranial pressure and or cerebral perfusion pressure. The populations and designs in these studies were too heterogeneous to pool the results, and you mentioned that earlier. However, examination of many of these studies showed that there were no differences in ICP or cerebral perfusion pressure between ketamine and the control group.
Two of these studies showed a small decrease in intracranial pressure in the ketamine group compared to the control group immediately post-dose, but that turned into an increased ICP at 30 minutes in one of the studies. One study reported an increase in ICP measurements after prolonged infusions of ketamine, and another reported an increase in ICP after bolus doses of ketamine. But statistical significance was not reported. This study evaluated patients with space-occupying intracranial lesions or obstructive hydrocephalus.
And four out of the five clinical trials included in this analysis had a measurement of neurologic outcome. All measurements were too heterogeneous to perform any pooled analysis.
So the largest study that was included in this systematic review with a population of 655 patients was performed by Jabra and colleagues. They used a GCS as a primary outcome and found no differences between ketamine and the control groups.
And other small studies found no difference with respect to Glasgow Coma Scale at ICU discharge or scores on neuropsychometric testing.
There were two trials that reported mortality data on a total of 680 patients as a secondary outcome and found no significant differences between groups.
Well, from a commentary standpoint, because that completes the results section, but from a commentary standpoint, the authors in this study set out to evaluate whether or not there was a definitive evidence that ketamine had a detrimental effect on intracranial pressure, cerebral perfusion pressure, and neurologic outcomes when compared to other induction agents. However, only 168 of the 953 patients had the primary outcome of interest evaluated. In fact, the largest study included in this analysis, like you mentioned, which included 655 patients, never even measured an ICP or a CPP. So it's difficult to say that this analysis conclusively shows a lack of effect of ketamine on ICP.
And Ken, the secondary outcomes in this analysis included some length of stay and mortality measures, as well as markers of neurologic function, such as the GCS and neuropsychometric testing. Unfortunately, markers like the GCS and neuropsychometric testing are subject to inter-observer variability, and in the included studies were only used as secondary outcomes, so they weren't powered to find a difference in most cases.
But they did do a reasonable job of searching the literature using internet databases and the gray literature. However, the studies were excluded if they were not printed in English, so they may have missed some non-English speaking centers' data.
So the authors of this analysis used a HADAD score to determine the methodological quality of the RCTs included. The HADAD score is a procedure intended to independently assess the methodologic quality of a clinical trial, and it's based on three aspects of the design. One, randomization. Two, blinding. And three, a full account of all patients randomized, including those who withdrew or dropped out. Scores on the scale range from 0, indicating a very poor quality, to 5, indicating a rigorous quality.
Yeah, the HADAD score had been widely used in the past, Megan, but there have been new scoring systems with more dimensions, and they've been developed over time. Berger and Alperson published an article called A General Framework for the Evaluation of Clinical Trial Quality, discussing the various aspects of four different scoring systems. I will include this in the blog posting, but tell me more about their HADAD score for this paper.
So two of the clinical control trials included in this analysis had a HADAD score of 2. Two trials had a score of 3. And only one trial had a score of 5, indicating rigorous quality.
The authors also used the Cochrane Risk of Bias tool to rate the likelihood ratio of selection, performance, attrition, and detection bias. This is Table 2 in the manuscript.
All of the outcomes that the authors set out to evaluate in this study were not able to be pooled due to heterogeneity of the populations, interventions, and outcome measures. This is what differentiates a systematic review from a meta-analysis.
Yeah, Megan, systematic reviews are qualitative analysis intending simply to describe the existing data. where meta-analyses are quantitative in nature and try to combine evidence from the populations of smaller studies to make assumptions about the group as whole.
Yeah, and it's too bad that they couldn't do that here, but unfortunately it's difficult to draw larger conclusions about the effects of ketamine on ICP with the collection of studies in this systematic review, because each of them are relatively different.
But what we can see is a lack of demonstrable harm that ketamine has on our neurologic parameters of interest when compared to the control arm in each of the papers. But we always like to reflect and look at our conclusions and compare those to those of the authors. Megan, do you have any thoughts on this?
So the authors conclude that ketamine does not adversely affect ICP, CPP, neurologic outcomes, or mortality compared with other induction agents. These are difficult conclusions based upon small sample sizes and secondary outcomes not necessarily powered to find a difference.
However, given the questionable original evidence suggesting that ketamine has detrimental effects on ICP, it seems that the best available evidence we have at this point does not demonstrate an appreciable negative effect on ICP, CPP, or neurological outcomes. But Megan, you got to give me a bottom line.
All right, Ken. So ketamine seems to be a reasonable alternative induction agent for undifferentiated patients requiring rapid sequence intubation in the ED. Evidence to show that ketamine has negative effects on neurologic outcomes is weak and has been largely extrapolated from non-ED patients. This systematic review found no compelling evidence that ketamine worsens intracranial pressure, cerebral perfusion pressure, or neurologic outcomes as measured.
So for a case resolution, you discuss this with your trauma, surgery, and neurosurgery teams that in undifferentiated patients requiring rapid sequence intubation in the emergency department, there's no good evidence to say that ketamine has an appreciable negative effect on intracranial pressure, cerebral perfusion pressure, or neurologic outcomes. Ketamine represents a reasonable induction agent for rapid sequence intubation in this patient. The patient is intubated after receiving the drugs you ordered during the initial resuscitation and remains hemodynamically stable throughout the procedure. After undergoing the appropriate diagnostic tests, the patient is diagnosed with a traumatic subarachnoid hemorrhage and is transferred to the trauma surgery intensive care unit for further management. So Megan, how are you going to take this information and apply it clinically?
So Ken, in patients who require RSI in the ED, ketamine is a reasonable alternative to other available induction agents, especially if patients have normal or low blood pressure. Other agents would be preferred in the setting of hypertension, as ketamine can increase blood pressure through sympathetic stimulation.
So Megan, normally in this part of the critical appraisal, we have a section called, "What do I tell my patients?" But in this case, since I've got an expert pharmacist, I'm going to ask you, if you were asked as the EM pharmacist, what would you say to the surgery and trauma team?
Well, Ken, I would tell them that in undifferentiated patients requiring RSI in the ED, there's no good evidence to say that ketamine has an appreciable negative effect on ICP, CPP, or neurologic outcomes. In my humble opinion, ketamine is a reasonable induction agent for RSI in this patient.
Megan, I don't think you have to be too humble. I wish I had an EM pharmacist working with me on every single shift.
Well, I appreciate that, Ken.
Well, this brings us into the exciting part of the program where we have the Keener Contest. Last week's Keener Contest winner was Dylan Norton, a fourth-year medical student from University of Colorado. He knew that mortality increased by 7.6% for every hour delay in providing antibiotics to patients with sepsis after the onset of hypotension. Megan, what's the Keener question for this week?
All right, I've got a really nerdy question for you, Ken. Who was the Haddad score named after? In what country is this person from?
Ooh, you really did pick an EBM nerdy question. I like it. Well, if you know the answer, then send me an email to thesgem@gmail.com with Keener in the subject line. The first person who correctly answers always receives a cool skeptical prize. Now, we do have a BEAM conference coming up in beautiful Sun Peaks, BC. It's called Ski BEAM, and it's January 26th to 28th. I hope to see some skeptical people there. Thanks again, Megan, for being the best EM pharmacist on the SGEM, and let me know if you find another paper that you think we should put our skeptical eye upon.
All right, Ken, I'll keep my eyes peeled.
Until then, can you give the SGEM tagline?
Sure. So remember to be skeptical of anything you learn, even if you heard it on The Skeptic's Guide to Emergency Medicine.
Talk to everyone next week.